Magic,
and the world of illusion.
Magic TV
and Craig Petty proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Hey guys, welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock on a Tuesday and I have the legend that is Dee Christopher here on the channel. Dee, I know how busy you are. We're going to get to this later on, but thank you so much for finding the time to hang out here. How are you doing?
I am very well and it is an honor to be on here. I've been watching all of your episodes lately and enjoying the interviews especially. So it was very kind of you to ask me to be here.
Well, I wanted to get you on the channel very early on because when I say the word legend, I don't use that lightly. You know, you are, and I really mean that because there are, you have done so much in your career and you are a household name amongst magicians in the UK and further afield. And you've done so much as well. You've had quite an eclectic career. You've not just been a performer. You've done so much. So I want to talk a bit about that and then talk about a little bit about what you're doing right now, because I know you've got some exciting stuff that you've got coming out in the next month or two, which
yes, indeed,
I'd love to talk about. But let's start off at the very beginning. When did you get into magic? Was it the typical story about, as a kid, you get a magic trick set, or is that...
100% the typical story. I'll send you a picture after this that you can intercut on here of me as a child dressed as a clown holding a magic book, which it sort of gives you an indication of how early on I got into magic. There wasn't really, like, I know a lot of people had family members that were magicians that bought them magic kits, or they saw Paul Daniels on the TV and bought one of his magic kits or whatever. But for me, my uncle had an interest in magic, but I didn't really see him much. He lived in Ireland and we were living in England. But there was a guy at my dad's office that was a magician part-time, and he used to buy in wholesale magic books and stuff. And my dad bought me one of those as a very young child, like 4 or 5 years old, something like that. And he brought it home. And then that Christmas, because I was so interested in magic from that one book, the uncle I spoke of and also my parents both bought me quite elaborate magic kits. I can remember one of them came in, one of those really cheap plastic top hats. Because there was two things that Christmas that were magic related, all of a sudden magic became everything. It kind of stemmed from there. But when I was like an early teenager, magic kind of dwindled away into nothing when I started getting interested in rock and metal music. I started writing music with friends of mine. We made a few bands and magic disappeared into nothing. And I remember the turning point that got me back into it was towards the end of my high school days. We went on a school trip and there was a deck of cards or something behind the tuck shop in this place that we were staying. And everyone was showing each other tricks and somebody knew that I was into magic and they handed me a deck of cards and I couldn't really remember how to do anything good. So that kind of really played on my mind a bit. And I was like, I need to get back into this because everyone was enjoying themselves so much. Just showing each other terrible little tricks where you deal cards into piles of 21 or whatever that trick is that I never learned because it's horrendous. I kind of got back into magic then. And that's when there was lots of videos, DVDs were just coming. The internet was just becoming a thing. So we had the internet at home and, things like Illusionist popped up at that point. And it kind of went from there. And then I just kept doing tricks, kept wanting to get into the industry as far as gigs and stuff like that go. So I started meeting a lot of people, got some gigs, got very, very busy. And then, yeah, I kind of went from there. But getting into the magic industry itself was a totally different thing. I literally can't remember how that happened, but it feels like I've been working in the magic industry for my entire life now. So
that's it. I mean, I think the first time that you popped up on my radar was around about the same time that you gothified me at Lads.
Oh gosh, yeah. I'll send you that picture as well to Intercut. People will love that.
I was there with Dave Penn. And I'd heard of you beforehand, but I hadn't actually met you properly. Mm. And that's when I met you for the first time. And within 10 minutes, you'd got me in, you know.
You looked fabulous.
I looked amazing. I think I need to revisit that look.
Well, you've got the tattoos for it now. So
now I can pull it off, I think.
Yeah.
But what made you decide to go down that route? Because people, you know, you talked about the picture of you as a clown as a kid. That's not how people think of Dee Christopher. People think of Dee Christopher as a darker storyteller. I don't know if I want to say bizarre or dark or gothic. Yeah, I mean, that's your genre. How did that come about?
Well, that kind of stemmed from the break that I took from learning magic. I mentioned that I got into music and that became the big thing and magic fell to the wayside. And, you know, getting into sort of death metal and black metal and all of these kind of things, fronting bands for so many years, that sort of became a big part of my identity. So when I went back into magic, that kind of came with me, and to a degree, because I was working corporate parties and stuff like that, when I became of age, it meant that I had to tone it down a little bit. But, you know, I remember having a conversation with a very successful magician, like corporate magician over here, at one point. And he said, you know, you've got to cut your hair, slick back your hair or whatever. You've got to do these five tricks and you've got to do that. And it felt like so many restrictions on something that had been a hobby up to that point. And it was kind of like wanting to just lock the deck of cards away again and never pick it up if this was the only way that I was going to be successful, because I don't want to remove parts of my identity just to get a few extra gigs. So for that reason, I kind of went in the opposite direction, rebelled a little bit and said, well, if I'm going to be not so concerned with getting these particular gigs that these particular magicians are getting, maybe I can carve a market for myself in the other industry that I'm involved with, the music industry. And from there, started getting in touch with the promoters I knew of gigs and events, club nights, even fetish parties, all sorts of things. But anything that was alternative. And for many years, that was my main bread and butter was, you know, I'd go on and open up for like a punk band or something for a room full of like punks. And for that reason, I had to dress the way I was dressing normally. It was quite nerve-wracking at first because I was trying to do tricks that weren't built for that kind of an audience. But that allowed me to craft throughout a few years doing events like this. It allowed me to craft interesting routines that would appeal to that kind of market. And from there, it kind of went on and on. And that kind of culminated in getting the attention of Objective Productions, which led to the whole Killer Magic thing. And I think, you know, I mean, I'm fairly technically skilled as a magician, but there's a lot of people that are a lot better than me. But I think it was my look and my style and the kind of stuff that I was doing that got the attention of people like that, which I think for me, like as an artist as opposed to a businessman, was much more fulfilling to be able to do those kind of things rather than just get those extra gigs that I was missing out on. So that's kind of how it went, really. I mean, I hope that answers the question.
Oh, absolutely. Because a lot of the success that you've had, you've stayed true to yourself. You haven't tried to be somebody else. And that's something that you see throughout your career. And like you say, there's a very good chance that, you know, and we'll talk about Killer Magic in a bit, but there's a very good chance that that whole thing came about because of who you are. You saw a niche and you developed a character that was able to be really successful in a niche that not many people go into. You know, you see books on how to be a great restaurant magician, how to be a great trade show magician, not how to be a great magician at a rock band. You know, you just don't see that. It's not a book that people can buy. How have you got any advice for people watching this as to how they can create a unique character?
Well, I think, you know, the idea of characterization in magic is separated into two very distinct areas. There's one where you get people that literally play characters. I'm struggling to remember his name. I did a convention with him once, a fantastic magician that just plays in characters. I know Jasper Blakely does that as well. But
would you class Piff as that as well?
Yeah, Piff as well. That's 100%. That's like one of the most iconic characters in Magic. But yeah, so there's that side of things, which that stems from being incredibly creative and having an idea that you can really go 100% into. I mean, the idea of Piff the Magic Dragon, and you know, the jokes and the magic he does, and even to the point of the sneeze and all that kind of stuff, and eating stuff on stage, like all of these little things to make up this incredible character with the deadpan kind of Jack D style presentation, is just mind-blowing to me. I could never create something like that. But then there's the other side of it, the lighter characterization of magic, and that tends to be more an extension of yourself. So you've got to take, okay, let's look at it this way. So I watch a lot of movies. If you put a link to my YouTube channel in your description, people will be able to see my horror movie reviews and all this kind of stuff. But I'm obsessed with movies. And you can watch lots and lots of movies, and eventually characters will start to jump out and you think, you know what, that guy or that girl is super cool. And you can take elements of those characters and build them into your own stuff that makes sense for what you want to portray when you're on stage. But it shouldn't waver too far from who you are yourself, because if it does, unless you're going down that really extreme character route, you won't be able to keep it up. So I think the thing that you can do is watch movies, listen to music, read books. I wouldn't necessarily say watch other magicians, because you know, it's a very small community, and if there's two people doing the exact same thing, it gets noticed. So take influences from outside that. But yeah, pick up on elements that you think are really cool, you think would suit you, and build them into your character. I mean, as a stage performer primarily, I've got a lot of opportunity to do that. As a close-up performer, it's a bit more difficult. You know, you can dress in a certain way, do certain kinds of tricks, but it doesn't allow you to tell the kind of story that you can tell when you're on a stage in front of, you know, X amount of people for an hour. So yeah, I mean, that's my advice would be either decide whether you want to go down the extreme character route and create something like, you know, John or Jasper's kind of extreme characters, or go down the other route and think, what's the best way that I can present myself on stage so that I'm happy with what I'm putting out, and that will make it really interesting to the audience, and will set me aside from others. And the way to do that is to take influences from characters you see in movies. So yeah, I think that's probably the best advice I can give. It's a very difficult thing because for me, it was a supernatural, well, not supernatural, it was a very natural progression to go down this route because I was just being the person that I was being on stage fronting metal bands, but instead of making guttural sounds with my throat, I was flouncing about the stage doing card tricks, you know.
And but what that does as well is it helps dictate your selection of material that you use in your act. So, you know, you do a lot of mentalism, you do a lot of stuff that's kind of more eerie, more darker. You're not going to see D. Christopher stand on stage and pull out a Sponge Bunny routine. It's just probably not going to happen. Although this is where you're probably going to tell me, actually.
Well, I used to do this cabaret up in Aberdeen quite a lot, run by a guy called Ian McCarran, called The Trickery, which was one of my favorite shows to do ever. You know, they don't do them very often anymore, only for special occasions, but it used to be a monthly thing. And yeah, there was always, every single time they'd bring a Dippy Duck and try to get me. It was like, we'll double your fee if you finish on Dippy Duck. And I never did because I wasn't that concerned about getting an extra fee. I was just more concerned about being a cool dude, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you look at other sort of alternative characters in magic, like Dan Sperry, for instance, is a really good friend of mine, but is a big inspiration to people looking for a character. You know, he's literally like that on and off the stage. But because of the nature of his character, he can get away with doing stuff. Like, it would not surprise me if he brought out a Dippy Duck that he'd painted red and black and found a way to make it amazing, because that's the kind of stuff that Dan can get away with, mixing it in with the shock and geek magic, you know? Well, so
here's a question, very quickly. Do you think, and this is something that's come up on the channel quite a lot, so I wanted to know your opinion on this. Do you think that if you are a magician, typical magician, deck, fiber optics, whatever it may be, do you think that the performing magic and mentalism in the same set takes away from the mentalism? Do you think if you do mentalism, you should just do mentalism, or is there a way of balancing the two?
I think, really, it should be dependent on your character. And who you are as a performer. If you're purporting to be some kind of spiritualist medium or something like that, then you probably shouldn't do like fiber optics. But if you're performing as a magician, I don't think there's anything wrong with mixing those two things. It's just dependent on the presentation. Like, the one thing that I find makes performances with magic and mentalism in their feel disjointed is not because of the choice of material, it's because of the performer not having these boundaries that you were talking about around their character that says, okay, this is the kind of stuff that I do, I need to do it in this way because that makes sense with the character that I'm portraying on stage. Like, if you're a fun-loving guy that's incredible at gambling moves and stuff like that, and you're doing gambling lessons and all this kind of stuff, and then all of a sudden you go into a deep mentalism kind of vibe and you're talking about energy and psychometry and all of these kind of things, that's not going to work. It's going to look like you've just mishmashed together a load of stuff, and it doesn't create an understandable and concise show. I mean, you know, if you look at an example of someone that can do both of those things incredibly well, you'd want to watch Derek Delgadio's In and of Itself, which is streaming now, or it was at least. I know it's going to be coming out on iTunes and stuff, but he mixes magic and mentalism, but because his show is so story-based and everything fits together like perfectly formed jigsaw pieces, it makes sense. He gets away with doing gambling moves and essentially what is mentalism, like sort of prediction routine and what feels a bit like a Q&A at the end. But because of the nature of the show, because of the nature of his character, it makes perfect sense. So I think, yeah, it's really dependent on the character that you're portraying and the boundaries you put around your magic. Like, I don't have a problem with doing something that's a bit magic if it makes sense with the other stuff that's in my show. So, like, for instance, I do a spirit bell act in my show. A bell magically rings by itself. I don't purport to be a medium. I even see that say that in my script when I talk about the Fox sisters and all this kind of stuff. I'm leaving everything up to a mystery, but the idea of a bell ringing is not a mentalism stunt unless you're saying that it's psychokinesis or something like that, which I'm not. But that mixed with the psychometry and mind reading stuff that's in the routine makes perfect sense because of the story that I'm telling and the way that it's presented. Whereas, you know, if I was doing it in a completely different way, it might not necessarily work. I'm tripping over my words a little bit, so I do apologize. No. But I'm trying to get as much information out to your viewers as possible as far as my perspectives on these things go.
No, it's amazing. It's amazing. It really is. Very thoughtful answer. Now, circling back to Killer Magic before we start moving on to you as a creator, that was obviously a very big deal. It took you from somebody who is well known within the magic community and well known as, you know, doing various different niches to suddenly putting yourself on television. I mean, that must have been an amazing experience. Was it did you have a good time filming it?
Oh, it was great fun. I mean, you know, TV magic on a whole, you know, a lot of people aspire to be on television, and I think I can give some quite good advice in that area. The idea of doing a TV show is very, very different to how people might think. I mean, with Killer Magic, it came out of like the late and great Anthony Owen, who was a very close friend, or became a very close friend after we worked together for so long. He was constantly creating ideas for magic shows for various channels. He was head of magic at Objective Productions. But one thing that he did regularly was he would hold kind of screen test style auditions. So him and his researchers would reach out to lots of magicians. There might not have been a particular show in mind, but he'd just try and meet as many magicians as possible. He'd constantly be scouting online and all of this. And there's still some people doing that kind of stuff. Just not Anthony anymore, obviously. There was a lot of us that went in an audition, hundreds and hundreds, for Objective in general, not necessarily for a particular project. And when Anthony had the idea for Killer Magic, which was originally called Suck My Wand, which is a bit of trivia for you, which we all were very against, so the name got changed in the end. When he had that idea, he'd go through all of his files and be like, oh, well, there's this person, and find some characters that were drastically different to one another, and put them together as a gang show. The same kind of thing he did with Monkey Magic, with Ali Cook and Pete Furman and that. That was sort of where it came from initially, and that was 3 years before anything really happened. And then when he had the idea for Killer Magic, he brought some of us in, and we started developing it with him. He was very open to suggestions and ideas, and, you know, the channel itself, it was with the BBC. They had a lot of ideas and things, and the format was constantly changing. And it took us a good couple of years of writing, going in and out of the office, trying to figure out the best ways to do things. And we had other writers and people like that coming in, trying to figure it out. And eventually, when it came to shooting, it only took us maybe 3 or 4 months to shoot the whole series up in Scotland. And yeah, but the thing that people don't realize is the work that goes in before that, like at least a year, I think closer to 2 years before we started shooting, we were writing and working on this show and not able to tell anyone about it. But yeah, like, so my advice for people aspiring to get into TV is put as many videos as possible online, make everything make sense with who you are and your character, have something to sell, something for people to latch onto, as far as your persona and everything goes, and try and meet as many producers as you possibly can, because eventually something will come around, or you might have a great idea for something and you can bring that to one of your producer buddies that you've met at networking meetings or through friends or whatever. But yeah, so going back to Killer Magic itself, it was great fun. Like, it was hard work, long work. You know, financially it didn't make much sense, but yeah, it was definitely worth doing. It was a really fun time, and I made some great friends out of that in production. And you know, that was kind of the first, well, it was close to the first time me and Damien met, and Damien's one of my best friends. Now we speak every single day. So yeah, like it's great fun to shoot TV shows. If you get the opportunity to do it, or if you can create the opportunity to do it, then I'd recommend it 100%. Just make sure it's pretty good, a good idea, an interesting way of doing things, and I'm sure it'll be great fun for anyone that gets the opportunity to do it.
And everybody in Killer Magic has gone on to be very successful in their own way.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we were very surprised at the success of the series. Like, we originally shot, we shot a taster, and then we shot a full pilot episode, and the BBC loved it so much that they put that out as a special while we were shooting the series. So yeah, and that was like super successful. Like, there was a lot of viewers, and you know, we were getting millions of people watching every episode, especially towards the start of the series, which was cool. You know, it's nice to see hard work being appreciated, I guess, by the general public. Obviously, there was a lot of people that didn't like it because we were just like five crazy kids doing ridiculous things. But yeah, I mean, it on a whole had quite a good reception.
Now, you know, doing Killer Magic, that's something that pretty much every magician in the world would like to do. They would like to have their own TV show. I mean, that is the holy grail. Well, there's two holy grails. The one is doing your own TV show. The other is being a successful creator of magic. And you've done both of those things. You've been a very successful creator of magic. And you've also obviously been had your own TV show. But it's more for you than just being a creator of magic, because you've worked with a lot of big companies over the years. And, you know, I don't know, am I okay to say that you've worked with Penguin for many years, haven't you? I mean, you don't
know.
You've worked with Penguin for many years. And, you know, you were the guy that was not just filming and creating this stuff and producing it, but also looking at it to see if it was any good or not any good. And, you know, there's a lot of people, what I'm trying to get at is there's a lot of magicians that want to be magic successful. They want to be, the next Greg Wilson, the next Jay Sankey. Hmm. You've been a successful creator, but you've also been in a position where you're the guy that looks at people submitting stuff and saying, well, yes, no. So what advice can you give somebody who wants to be magic famous? They want to be the next Jay Sankey, they want to be the next Greg Wilson, whatever it may be.
It's very similar to like creating magic. You know, there's again two ways of doing that, and it's very similar to creating a character. You can be and I see a lot of people doing this, creating magic to release it, right? And then there's creating magic for yourself to do that, you know, somebody sees, a producer sees, and is like, yo, that's a great trick. Do you want to release it? And then you'll either say yes or no. And I don't think there's anything wrong with either of those. But I think the problem comes when people aren't aware of what's come before and aren't really experienced enough to be creating and releasing tricks. You know, I know you've spoken about this on your channel before, the idea of having the notebook and writing down the ideas, do it for a year. It'll be a much better trick, but also you'll know whether you still like it or not, whether it's good or not, and all this, the idea of working something before releasing it. And that doesn't happen as often as it should. And there's a lot of incredibly creative people. I see so many amazing people doing stuff on Instagram, especially stuff that only works for Instagram, and that's fine as long as it's marketed that way. But if you're marketing something as something that's going to work in real life, that's going to be perfect for stage, perfect for close-up, perfect for online, perfect for this and that and the other, like a lot of magic companies will want you to do, that's where it becomes a bit of a problem. The idea is you've got to be creating interesting ideas with methods that work for whatever medium you're marketing it towards, and then don't lie about it because that's a major issue in the marketing of magic. And the only way to really get successful in the magic industry is to work hard and keep coming up with these interesting ideas and only release the ones that are good. I mean, you know, I've released a ridiculous amount of things over the years, and towards the beginning of my career creating magic, the stuff that I was releasing, it was stuff that I was performing, but looking back at it now, it's not really that good and not that, you know, it doesn't really break the mold in any way. It was never going to be blockbuster kind of stuff. It was just kind of filler because I was desperate to, release magic because that was becoming a thing, when the internet revolution kind of came around in magic, everybody wanted to start releasing tricks and now it's exploded. But I was super into that. I just wanted the books that I was writing to be on the bookshelf next to like Anaman and Corinda and all of this. And it didn't deserve to be there. So I think, you know, the best thing that a magician that wants to release their material or is coming up with ideas that they think are good is to go back and watch that video that I guess you'll put a card, that video that you recorded about carrying around the notebook and the way to work on ideas and all of that, because that's an important step that a lot of people in a rush to market miss out. And you can really tell, you know, I've had people in my studio that have been doing magic for 3 months, and I've had people in my studio that have been doing magic for 30 years. And you can tell when somebody's got a trick that they've kind of just come up with and done once or twice or recorded it on their webcam, or someone that's been working something for their entire career. Yeah. And I can tell you with no shame that it's the latter there that is going to be the most successful trick, and it's going to give a good reputation to that performer as being a creator, and it'll lead to them being able to create that second revenue stream that can be very profitable in the long run. But yeah, so just don't rush ideas to market, like don't half-bake things, you know, just create stuff that you want to perform yourself. And if you want to perform it, there's probably 1,000 other magicians around the world that also will want to perform it. But yeah, try and come up with interesting stuff. I mean, that's, you know, that's the main thing. Just come up with interesting stuff, not another trick with a flap that changes the color of a pack of gum. Because we see like 8,000 of those a month. So.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can't imagine the amount of stuff that you've seen that has fallen in the bin, you know, that has never even seen the light of day. It must be.
You know, I mean, at Penguin, you know, I was at Penguin for about 5 years. and I'm still doing some work with them here and there, just not in a full-time capacity anymore. And we'll talk about that later on, because I know you know all about that. But yeah, when I was working with Penguin, the amount of submissions we'd get from people that would go straight into Sean Dunn's inbox, because Sean was the inbox where submissions at penguinmagic.com would come to. There was a lot of stuff that didn't even make it to my desk to have a look at, and Harlan's desk, and Le Capo's desk, and Eric Tate's desk, and Roddy McGee's desk. Like, you know, the thing with Penguin is everybody got to see the submissions that were good enough, but there was hundreds of them that didn't even make it to our desks. And that's because people are just sort of coming up with half-baked ideas that have been done 1,000 times before. So, you know, I mean, there's not really much point in trying to flog a dead horse, if you know what I mean, unless you've got a method or a hook in the routine, like if it's a classic routine that just completely is mind-blowing. There's no point in sending in another color change or whatever, because there's enough of that kind of stuff. Unless it's mind-blowing, don't bother. But the good thing about Penguin is, you know, Sean is constantly talking to people. And if you send something in that has the potential to be good, he'll or I'll send an email back and say, oh, have you thought about doing this, this, and this? Maybe work on this bit a little bit, and, you know, give him some advice. Because at the end of the day, you know, the people that are sending in these not so good ideas are being creative enough to create their own magic. And if they keep doing that for 5 years, they'll probably be creating some incredible tricks. And, you know, I want to help people get to that point via submission systems and stuff like that, because then it remains completely confidential. And it gives the creator an opportunity to get some insight from working professionals in the industry that know what is going to be good and what's not. And also professional magicians that have worked thousands upon thousands of shows and know what's going to work and what's not. So yeah, I mean, that was kind of a roundabout way to to answer that question, but hopefully there's enough information there.
Absolutely. So to sum it up, don't suck.
Yeah, pretty much. But you know, not sucking only comes from repetition and working hard, because you know, you might create 100 tricks and one or two of them will be blockbusters. So don't give up, like, just because you've created some tricks that aren't good or didn't get accepted by a magic company. Like, just keep creating more and more and more stuff. Take inspiration from everywhere. And eventually you'll hit on that gold mine. And, you know, once you've been doing it for like a decade or whatever, working in the industry, you immediately know what's going to be good, what's not, what's going to work for you as a performer, what's not. So yeah, it's just put the time in. That's it. Let's put the time in, rinse, repeat, etc.
Now, I'm going to talk about the new thing, but before I do, I've got one last question with regards to creativity. Mm-hmm. What would you say is the favorite thing that you have personally created yourself? I think if you ask the general magic population, a lot of people, when they think of D. Christopher, they probably think of the razor wallets, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was like, I've always loved peak wallets. You know, I've owned lots and lots of them from back in the outlaw days, Alakazam. Tony Miller and loads of people's Peak wallets. But you know, I've always carried wallets that look like this. This isn't a Razor wallet, but I'll explain in a bit. You know, I've carried minimalist wallets like that for years, and there was never anything that was any good in that genre. Sans Mines put one out, but it didn't really have a Peak function. It was sort of a card to wallet. You know, and I was like, I want to make a wallet that I can use like for casual performances, that can work as my everyday wallet with a few cards in and whatever, and just throw it in my pocket and it's always on me. You know, I wear wallets in the front pockets of my jeans, and I get told off by my girlfriend if my front pocket is bulging like 3 inches out of the side of my leg. So yeah, I've always used those minimal wallets. I wanted to create something that was simple, that was good. A lot of people create wallets with 5,000 functions, and it does result in them being massive and thick pieces of leather. But also, when there's so much stuff in there, you never end up using half of it. I'd rather have a wallet that has a really good Peak in it, that makes sense for me, that's slim, that just fits in my wallet. And, you know, eventually someone else might have created it, but I hadn't seen it yet. So I just got in touch with some leather workers I was friends with and said, hey, let's do this. And we ended up doing it in vegan leather as well, because, you know, I've got a lot of friends that are vegan, and I know a lot of magicians that are vegan, and they don't like using leather products, which is fair enough. So if you can find a material that's, you know, just as good, looks just as good as leather, then why not use that instead? Absolutely. So we did. But yeah, so Razor Wallet was a big highlight. It was super successful. It's one of the most recent things as well. But I think my favorite products that I've ever put out, and I like not saying my favorite trick of all time, but my favorite products that I've ever put out, are the two live lectures with Penguin. Mm-hmm. So I did a live lecture that was like 4 hours long or something, back in 2015, that has a whole bunch of material, loads and loads of stuff, magic, mentalism, loads of stuff I've created over the years, just all crammed into this one video. And that was super fun, and people seem to like that. But my favorite of all time has to be the Penguin Live Act. And that had a mixed response. Some people didn't really like my performing persona, because, you know, even though I've got a dark look and, you know, I do some spooky stuff, I also mix it up with some lighter hearted stuff, sarcastic British humor and all of that. And some people loved it, some people hated it. But for me, that was one of the most fun products I've ever put out, because I got to just do a show, just do an hour long show, and then I taught you how to do it. And it was great, you know, because you could see the process that goes into it, the idea of having a through line that ties everything together, and, you know, approaching a parlor or stage performance in a different way that doesn't make it just a strung together bag of tricks, which a lot of magic shows tend to be. You know, so that's one of my favorites, because I got to talk about theater a bit as well as magic, you know.
That's great. That's fantastic. Now, there's something very specific I want to talk about. Yep. Been a big buzz around you and what you have coming out in the next couple of months. I'm not talking about a product, I'm talking about a brand new company. And there's been a lot of teasers, there's been a lot of
there's been a little bit of hype,
and I'm hoping to try and cut through the hype a little bit and find out more about what the plan is and what your goal is with it. And obviously I'm talking about 1914.
Yeah, so the 1914, and that name might sound familiar to some people that have been in magic for quite a while, because back in like 2012, 13, 14, something like that, before Killer Magic, I started a little mini independent production outfit with a friend of mine, Jack Curtis, who's a great filmmaker and mentalist from Nottingham. I was living in Nottingham at the time as well. And we did like Louis Laval's first DVD, Paint the Roses Red, and Fraser Parker's first DVD, True Mysteries, and some Brad Adams stuff, some my stuff, like a few releases, you know. We were.
I remember reviewing some of them on the Wizard Product Review way back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Louis was the guest. He was great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was performing Harmony, the one sort of what he says is the one good trick that was on that DVD. Because again, you know, it's the same for everyone that creates magic. When you look back at the stuff you were doing 10 years ago, you were like, what was I thinking? But at the time, you loved it, you know. So anyway, yeah, like back then, we had this little production outfit and it kind of fizzled out. Jack went over to Australia to teach film in like Sydney University or something for X amount of time and started going around making documentary films and all of this after that. I went on to Killer Magic, and then off Killer Magic, I started working with Penguin, which, you know, I was sort of freelancing for them at first, and then it became a full-time position, like sort of running everything in Europe for them. You know, so the 1914 fizzled out and we said, well, maybe we'll come back to it one day, but we never did. Up until the first lockdown hit the UK, you know, when that happened, and we've spoken about this privately before, you know, obviously the pandemic is a terrible thing, but from a perspective of, you know, reflection and thinking about where it is you want to go, what you want to do, when that hit, and you couldn't really do anything at all, it forced you to think about things. And when the lockdown hit and I began thinking about, you know, where do I want to go in my career next? Because I've done a lot of stuff. As you mentioned, I've been lucky enough and worked hard enough to do a bunch of different things. But I was like, where do I want to go next? What's going to make me happy? And, you know, I really enjoy the production side of magic and, you know, the business aspects of the magic industry. And I've got a lot of friends in the magic industry. So I figured, well, I could stay at Penguin for another 5 years, another 10 years and do that because, you know, they're all really good friends of mine and they've got a great company and, you know, they release some good magic. Or I could take a step back and do things my way. And looking at the rest of my career and the idea of doing things my way, it kind of put it into perspective. And I was like, you know, I'm never going to be 100% happy if I'm working for someone else, you know, having these sort of this cage put around my creativity. And it's, you know, I'm not saying Penguin was a bad place to work at all because it was great. You know, I had a lot of fun and the people are all great. And that's why I'm still doing bits and bobs with them now. But, you know, I wanted the opportunity to do things my way, take all of the things I've learned over the last 10 years working full-time in magic and use the contacts I've made and the knowledge that I've gained and the experience that I've gained to create something that was more in line with the way that I thought the magic industry should be going. So I rang Jack up, you know, we kind of casually kept in touch here and there, just, you know, because we were friends. But I rang him up and I said, hey, do you want to do the 1914 again? And he was like, yeah, I've just finished a project. I've got time. So yeah, he'd just come off the back of making a film with the British Film Institute. And that had literally just been delivered. It was going into all the festivals. Everything was good to go. So he was looking for a new challenge. I just happened to ring him at the right time. And yeah, we just sat down and thought about the way a magic company should be, the way magic should be taught, and you know, what would make us excited and happy about being in the industry, releasing magic. What kind of tricks would we want to find? What kind of projects would we want to develop? And how would those things be taught? You know, because we were always very tech focused. Like, we put out the first ever Blu-ray like back in the day on magic instruction. So yeah, still doing those kind of things. But yeah, so with the 1914, we set that up. We decided to go full force on it. We signed like 30 projects in the first month with various magicians that I really respect and people that I know have great material that they weren't going to release, but you know, through begging and chatting and developing projects, you know, there's some great stuff that would never have seen the light of day that's going to be coming out on our label. So yeah, with the 1914, we have a whole bunch of projects. The company is due to be launching in January, but you can sign up on the1914.com right now to get a free £5 voucher for when the site launches, and be the first one to know. Like, about 800 people have signed up so far off us just releasing the logo. So that's pretty crazy. But yeah, the first 1,914 magicians to sign up will get a free £5 voucher and early access. But yeah, and what you can expect is things from Louis Laval, from Alexander Marsh, from myself, from Jack, from new faces you will never have seen in magic before, people like Ben Francis, you know, also performers that you will have seen on tours like The Illusionists and stuff like that, who have never released their material before, are releasing their material with us. I don't want to give too many names out aside from the people that, if it's me running the company, you'd expect them to be there. But yeah, people like Alan Rorison, Matt Parrott, and you know, people that, you know, I've worked with over the years, and I know have got killer material, and also workable material. Because, you know, if we were going to release something that, like a project that was for tricks that were great over Zoom or on Instagram or whatever, we'd say clearly this is a project that has tricks that are great for Zoom or Instagram. But 99% of the material that we're releasing is all workable stuff, stuff that is amazing, is powerful, will blow you away, but it's also stuff that's attainable and achievable and performable by every magician that puts the time in.
Is this more of a case of, if you want to release something through us, don't contact us, we'll find you?
Well, I wouldn't say that, because there's... you know, that's the way we've been playing it so far, because this is the first time I've ever spoken publicly about, you know, the kind of stuff that we're doing. But, you know, I know there's thousands of amazing magicians that are creating some great stuff that I will never have heard of and Jack will never have heard of before. And, you know, I'm always up for meeting and hearing from new people. Because I get excited by good magic. So if you've got tricks that are good, shoot us an email at info@the1914.com, because we'll take a look and we'll get back to you. But yeah, one big thing that not a lot of magic companies are doing that we were really adamantly focused on was putting as much effort into the theory and performance tips and marketing and all these kind of things. Like, we've created like a course system built into the site. Jack is a great coder, so he built something that's kind of like Udemy and Masterclass and those kinds of things, but tailored to magic instruction. So as well as like the standard releases and gimmicks and tricks and downloads and all this kind of stuff that you'd expect from a magic company, we've also got courses. which, you know, I mean, one of the first ones I can tell you is Alexander McAleer, Alexander Marsh from Champions of Magic, very successful Magic tour. He's toured all over the UK, America, like thousands and thousands and thousands of shows, hundreds a year, is doing a course on stagecraft. So it's tailored towards mentalists, to a degree magicians, but it's the art of stage magic, a full course with lessons, everything from how to choose the material, how to block, rehearse, how to speak on stage, all the way through to getting the gig, how to PR the gig, marketing, all of this kind of stuff, a really comprehensive zero to hero course on becoming a stage performer. So there's stuff like that in there as well, which is the stuff that, you know, I mean, I love seeing great magic, but it's that kind of stuff, the real gold, that I always look for when I'm watching magic products is the theory and the ideas and stuff like that. So it's nice to be putting a focus on some products that are really dedicated to that side of magic. Really, we just want to make people better magicians and more successful magicians. And, you know, there's only so much that tricks can do for you. So you should be looking at products like that as well, you know.
Absolutely. And I know that you're very passionate about the quality of the actual final production.
Yeah.
As you would expect. I know you're passionate about video production anyway, and you've said that Jack's a, you know, filmmaker. Mm. I know, you know, you could argue that, oh, it's just a magic trick, shoot it in your bedroom, but I totally disagree with that. I think there's something really important about having a quality product that you can actually, you know.
I agree. I mean, like, speaking of that stagecraft course, which I shouldn't be giving so many details away before the site launches, but whatever. With that stagecraft course, we shot it and we binned it because the level of quality wasn't good enough. The material was amazing, but you know, we shot it in my studio. Like, I own a studio here with my partner in Ipswich, about an hour outside of London for those people further afield, you know, and we shot it here. It looked great, it was cool. We were thinking about the way we wanted to do things, and that was one of the first things we shot. We were like, you know, it's a course on stagecraft. Why are we not hiring a theater and filming the entire thing in a theater where he can go on stage, demonstrate these things, be out in the stalls and, you know, talking about these things? That's the way that a stagecraft course should be. So that's the way we're going to do it. So, you know, we lost about $1,000 on producing it the other way, but I'd rather lose $1,000 and create a product that is what it should be, and a product that looks incredible and is fun to watch as well as informative. From doing that and figuring out that's the way we wanted to do things, we decided to take our knowledge of television and film production and treat every production as if it was a spot in a TV show. For every project, we've hired amazing locations. Like, we've got Louis Laval in some underground caves performing to people. And, you know, we've hired escape rooms and bank vaults and, theatres and spots in the woods and all sorts of crazy places to make things that are visually exciting. But, you know, the core of it is super strong material. But I think if the material is strong enough, why would you just shoot it in a bedroom when you can make the production to the level of the magic that's on the instruction, you know? And that's something that is keeping things really exciting for us. It means that stuff is costing more because we've got a studio sat here we could be using, but I'd rather create stuff that we can be really proud of. When we look back in 10 years' time, I don't want us to look back as we look back at the magic we released 10 years ago and think, oh, what was I thinking? I want to look back and go, you know, that was a fun time. that's an amazing project. And the only way we can do that is by taking all of our knowledge and experience and creativity and creating amazing things. So yeah, that's kind of the ethos behind the company, is like, fuck the profit margin, basically.
I love that. I know you can't say too much because the company hasn't even launched, and you've probably said more than you actually are supposed to anyway.
I'm going to get told off after this. You know, I'm working with some great people. You know, like we, myself and Jack, and then a bunch of other people that I don't want to give too much information on. But yeah, I'm going to get told off for giving away so much. But, you know, fuck it. It's only... You know, nobody's going to be able to do what we're doing. So there's no real worry for me of people trying to replicate what we're doing before we launch in January, because, you know, they would have been having to work on it for 6 months like we have been. So
I love that you've taken the same advice that you gave at the beginning of this interview about how to be a performer in your own niche and, you know, how to actually make yourself successful there. And you've just shown us that you've just taken that entire blueprint and you've just applied it to a magic company. You're literally, you know, practicing what you preach, which is just great.
100%. You know, I don't like to, you know, I mean, you will have seen me stepping over my words and all sorts, like, you know, for transparency, Craig gave me a list of topics that he wanted to talk about during this, and my initial intention was to sit down and script out some cool answers with fancy language and all that, and then I was like, you know, you've got to be honest and speak from the heart, and it's very difficult to do that if you're scripting things so you come across like someone that knows what they're talking about. The best thing that you can do in this kind of situation is just talk from the heart. So that's what I've been doing. So it means that all of the advice that I've given is stuff that I put into every aspect of my career and my life. You know, there's no point in writing books and shooting videos on these kind of ideas and tips and not actually putting them to action. You know,
yeah.
It's all about the execution, because, you know, a lot of people write books on performance tips and stuff like that, and they've done like 10 shows in their life, you know. So yeah, you want to be, when you're looking at stuff like that, you want to be looking at stuff from people that you know have been really working. Like, and that's why we got Alex to do the Stagecraft course. Was he's one of the performers that I know has done way more gigs than any of us on the team. Like, this guy works like a lot. So yeah, he was the perfect choice when we decided we wanted to do a Stagecraft course.
Perfect. So, and I really appreciate your honesty, and I'm going to ask you something, and feel free to say no. I know you're launching with 5 products in January. Can you give us a hint as to what any of those might be about, or anything? Can you
whet
our appetite slightly?
So when we launch, there are going to be 5 products available, some physical products, some downloads. So one of them is this wallet that I showed earlier, mm-hmm. which is, you know, what I've been using as my daily wallet for, I don't know, maybe a year, something like that. It was not long after Razor came out, because I've been using Razor for a long time before we put that out. So yeah, not long after that, I started jamming on this, because I love the Razor wallet, but it only had 2 card slots. You know, I've just started a new business. I've got a business credit card. Where am I going to put that? So I had to make one with more card slots. Something that addressed some of the issues that people had with Razor, like, you know, it's 1 centimeter wider here, so it's easier to pull things in and out, and it can fit cash in and stuff. You know, it's also got some interesting features built in, like its main purpose is as a thought of card to wallet. So somebody can name a playing card and you can pull it out of the wallet, like fold it up in a quarter, like that. So yeah, that's cool. That's called Shadow. We've obviously got the Stagecraft course we've spoken about a lot. And just a note on Shadow, I'm not detracting from the Razor wallet. It's still a brilliant product and something that myself and Penguin are working on refining. This is a completely separate thing, but it's what I've been using as my wallet since. Yeah, the Stagecraft course, we've got something from Louis Laval, which is very exciting. It's him teaching a classic technique in mentalism that he's been using for, well, for his entire career in mentalism, really, like since he was like 15 years old. We got permission from the guy that created it to teach the technique and Lewis's notes on it, and also how he takes that simple technique and turns the routines into performance pieces. So that's like a pretty substantial project, and fans of Lewis's work will absolutely love this. Also, anyone that's into mentalism in a close-up arena is going to love it anyway. Yeah, so that's kind of three projects. We've got a couple more we're launching with that I don't want to give too much away on. But we've also got a bunch of other stuff like decks of cards and stuff like that. We've been working with Destino, a fantastic playing card designer in Indonesia, who did like the King Legacy deck and Royal Verb and like the Hanya and Mandalas from Damien, and just all sorts of incredible decks of cards. So when we started up this new company, we wanted to create a deck of cards. So he was the first person I called on that. But yeah, so we're working on loads of stuff. Like that's kind of all the information I can give you, because otherwise I'll keep talking.
You give me more than I thought you were going to.
Yeah, like I'm going to get in such trouble after this for giving away that much information. But yeah, I mean, you know, because it feels like I'm just sat here talking to you. Mm-hmm. I just feel like I could just talk and tell you about all of the amazing things we're doing, but I'm not allowed. So
I get it. But these are going to be exclusive to you guys, right? Again, you need to sign up to 1914 in order to find out all about all this.
Yeah. To find out about all of these things, the best thing you can do is click the link in the description, like www.the1914.com, and sign up there. You know, I mean, yeah, you get gift voucher and stuff like that. But the main thing is that you get to hear about all of this stuff first, and I wouldn't be pushing it so much if I wasn't super, super excited about people finally getting to see these productions we've been working on, you know, most of this year. So yeah, that's the way to do it. We will eventually be wholesaling to people like Penguin and Murphy's, and you know.
Well, the thing is, you're so well connected in the magic industry. You know everyone, so you know. I'm sure that you know. And the thing I know about you as well, D, is you don't burn bridges. You know, you're always, you know, everybody I speak to has nothing but the highest praise for you. You know, you meet some creators and they burn. Well, they burn through production companies. Oh, I've never worked with that guy. I've never worked with that guy. You develop relationships and you keep them through time.
Yeah, I think, you know, stoicism is a vital thing. Like, just be a nice person and work hard. That's, you know, and I think there's space, because there's a lot of people that you're right, they'll start working with one company and they'll denounce every other production company in magic. And, you know, that's kind of a ridiculous thing to do, because there are a lot of great companies in magic all doing very different things. And, you know, even if you truly believe that the company you're working with at that time is the best and doing the most incredible things, and you don't care about what everyone else is doing because they're wrong, there's no need to start shouting about that, because I'm sure people that are working at that company feel the exact same about the company you're working with. You know, there's space for everyone, just in the same way that there's space for magic that can be released for performing on Instagram and Zoom, or magic that can be released for performing in the real world for workers. You know, there's equal amounts of space for companies doing things in very different ways. And, you know, I don't necessarily agree with all of the decisions that certain companies make, but I'd never shout about it, because if that's their path and that's the way that they feel they can give to the community in the best possible way, then, you know, power to them. Happy days. Get on with it. You know?
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you one last question, because I know you're a busy guy, and we're going to wrap this whole thing up in a minute, but there's a question I ask everybody I interview, and you've kind of answered it, so it's a bit of a weird thing, but I always ask people, what's next? What's on the bucket list? Now, you've had a career that most magicians would dream of. You know, you've done the TV thing, you've been a creator, you've done the highest profile gigs, you've gone all around the world performing. Mm-hmm. Is the 1914 a new chapter for you in terms of, are you putting less emphasis on performance as a performer so that you can focus on 1914? Or do you still have things on your bucket list that you want to hit as a performer? Because I wouldn't be surprised if you said, no, I'm done, because, you know, and we've not talked about this, so I don't know the answer.
No, not at all. I mean, from a performance point of view, like, you know, I've done a lot of good stuff. You know, like you say, I've been around the world. I've had the opportunity to do some great, like, theater runs and stuff like that, which have been real highlights for me. But yeah, so from a live performance point of view, yeah, I mean, I'll never stop doing the shows. I'll now just, you know, I've got the opportunity to just do the shows that I want to do rather than having to pay the bills with that. But yeah, so from the live performance point of view, I'll still be doing shows, but not as frequently. The 1914 is a huge project that you know, is going to take over. But at the same time, you know, I'm still working with Objective and some other production companies on various TV shows. Like, a lot of people don't know that I do some editing for TV and stuff as well. So, you know, I'm still working on things like that, writing shows, you know, behind the scenes, you know, also working on some stuff that maybe in a couple of years' time, you might see me with one of my friends in a new project, which is very exciting, but obviously I literally can't say anything about that. But yeah, so I'm still doing bits and bobs in TV, bits and bobs in live performance, and then a whole lot of industry stuff. So that's what's coming next, a mishmash of all sorts of things with a heavy focus on producing incredible magic.
That is fantastic. And Dee, thank you so much for finding the time. Like, I don't think people realize how busy, I know how busy you've been the last few months. And
yeah, well, I'm surprised that you're managing to find the time to create these videos, because the amount of, like, for those that don't know, like, Craig runs two very successful magic agencies, and during this pandemic time, it's gone crazy for them with shows over Zoom. So yeah. I know you've spoken about that kind of stuff on your other videos, but yeah, I mean, the fact that you're managing to produce so much YouTube content blows my mind. I was struggling to do one video a week when I was putting focus on it. So yeah,
I've got a good team that I surround myself with, just like you. You know, I think you have to have you can't do everything on your own, else you'll burn yourself out. I think you have to have a team around you that you can rely on and you can trust. And also you have to have friends that you can go to and say, help, or just like-minded people that you can go to and vent sometimes. I think that's very important.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like, I mean, that kind of throws back to when we were talking about creating magic. One thing I should have mentioned is whenever I create something new, before I even go and show it to people, I'll text like Louis Laval, Alexander Marsh, Alan Rorison, like these kind of guys, and say, what do you think of this? And that's a super useful thing to have. So make lots of friends over the internet if you're creating magic, and show them your latest ideas and see what they think about it. Because you'll be surprised at the kind of feedback you get. So there you go. That's another little tidbit of information based on
what you're over and we got another tip. That's great.
Yeah. Well, let's say goodbye now. Maybe we'll do another one of these in a year's time or something and see how it's changed.
Absolutely. But in the meantime, guys, sign up for the mailing list. You're going to be the first to find out about everything that's happening at the 1914. I'm going to put a description in the description link down below. I'm going to put a link, but also you can see it at the bottom of the screen. So sign up for that.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Craig.
Thanks, Dee. I really appreciate you coming on board and spending some time with us. And guys, make sure you subscribe to the channel. I'll be back tomorrow with my little buddy Ryland. We'll be doing the review show, so look out for that. And thanks very much. Have a good day. Bye, everyone.
Sayonara.